Alain de Botton has made a career of applying philosophy to everyday life. Things like travel, work, sex, and most recently, art. He published a book called Art as Therapy, in which he makes the case that looking at art helps people feel better.
And really, the starting point is so simple. What is the point of looking at art? And it's such a kind of naive question that sophisticated people like to think, well, obviously, you know, we always knew that a long time ago. But I just go back to the beginning, because I've often felt a bit puzzled in museums and in front of works of art and just thought, how does this fit into my life? Is there any sort of good or bad way of behaving in front of this work of art? And it's kind of my belief that at the end of the day, if art's going to matter to us, it's got to, in some ways, do something for us. It's a tool.
Well, so, for example, let's take a painting everyone knows, the Mona Lisa. What kind of therapeutic insights might the Mona Lisa inspire? We all know it's important, but you're talking about going a little beyond that.
That's right. First of all, the Mona Lisa is such a difficult painting to have any kind of personal relationship with, for the simple reason that it's so famous.
It's also behind about three sheets of glass.
Right. In other words, you're going to have a very unnatural relationship with it. So the first thing to do is to remember that at the end of the day, you are not an art historical scholar, that you're not about to pass an exam. If this thing's going to matter to you, it's because you have to enjoy it. And just ask yourself a very simple question. What do I like about this painting? And, you know, one of the things that's quite nice about this painting is that the Mona Lisa looks quite nice. Now, this seems really odd and a really sort of stupid thing to say. But, you know, if you wanted a friend and you were sort of looking around, you might think, actually, this woman's quite friendly. And why do you think she looks friendly? Well, there's something about her eyes and her mouth which seems tender, complicated, slightly humorous, but indulgent. She's the sort of person that you feel like you could tell something a little bit embarrassing to.
But that's lovely. Instead of looking at the Mona Lisa as a famous painting, you're just looking at her as a friend, an interesting person. And then she's perhaps helping you access feelings inside, emotions that you might then examine in yourself.
That's right. And this is very much the approach of the book. At one point, we look at a mother and child, you know, beautiful classical Bellini mother and child. You know, there are thousands of them in museums around the world. And when you just step back and think, OK, what is going on here? Why is it nice to look at this? This is basically a work of art that is making the idea of hanging out with your mother when you're about 8 months and sitting on her lap. It's reminding you of a deep sort of primordial joy and sense of security, which, of course, as we grow up, we're not supposed to be mummies, boys and girls. We're supposed to be tough, grown-up creatures. But all of us long, particularly at moments of difficulty, at things were not going right, etc., we long to go back to that primitive, primal cuddle.
It's almost like getting a little hit of tenderness.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the word tenderness, because tenderness has got really low esteem. But I'm really interested in tenderness. I think there isn't enough tenderness in the world, which is separate from mawkishness or sentimentality or soppiness or any of these derogatory terms. Tenderness is a due recognition of the vulnerability that is in each of us. And the reason why the mother and child was such a popular kind of icon of Western art is that it taps into something psychological, you know, that came along way before religion did.
So I'm curious, what would you change about the experience of going to a museum? Because right now, let's say, you know, we go to a famous museum, we walk through the galleries, we stop in front of paintings, we read the little tag on the next to the painting, you know, it tells us the artist, the title, maybe when it was painted. Is there anything in that you would change?
Look, I think that museums have unbelievable prestige in our societies. You know, in every big city in the United States, when there's some surplus wealth, what are people use that surplus wealth for? They give it to the museum. In the same way that in the Middle Ages in Europe, people used to give money to the cathedral. It's like it's the place of the highest repository of values. But when you go into these places, they promise, I think, to do more than they actually do. And part of the reason is that they've been hijacked by an unfair academic agenda. So just think of the way that the rooms are laid out. They're laid out by things like, you know, the Renaissance, the 19th century, you know, Impressionism, Cubism, etc. These are the names of the rooms. But as an ordinary member of the public, I'm not interested in a room in Cubism just like this. I carry the sort of things that we all care about. Interest in work, mortality, friends, family. And if I was in charge of organizing museums, what I would do is I would give over sections and rooms to particular themes in our life. So, for example, there would be a room on love, some rooms on love. And the room on love would put before your eyes a number of works of art that aim to stimulate, provoke, re-enchant, and nourish you in the areas of relationships. You know, in the National Gallery in London, there's a picture by Pisano called Daphnis and Chloe, which shows a loving couple on the very first night that they've been together. It's incredibly tender and incredibly full of appreciation. And, you know, I would show any married couple with a couple of kids and a busy work life, I would take them back to that Pisano and I'd say, that's how you guys used to be. Just remember how it used to be and look at where you are now and think about that level of appreciation. I would use that picture as a way of provoking those thoughts.
Alain de Botton. He's the co-author with John Armstrong of Art as Therapy.